Shukla, light. Krishna, and darkness. Gati, ways of passing. He, certainly. Ate, these two. Jagat, of the material world. Shasvate, of the Vedas. Mate, in the opinion. Ekaya, by one. Yati, goes. Anavritim, to no return. Anyaya, by the other. Avartate, comes back. Puna, again. Translation. According to Vedic opinion, there are two ways of passing from this world. One in light and one in darkness. When one passes in light, he does not come back. But when one passes in darkness, he returns. Purport. The same description of departure and return is quoted by Acharya Baladeva Vidyabhushan from the Chandogya Upanishad. Those who are fruitive labors and philosophical speculators from time immemorial are constantly going and coming. Actually, they do not attain ultimate salvation, for they do not surrender to Krishna. Om Agyana Chimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. You cannot say that Krishna is being dogmatic in Bhagavad Gita. Dogmatic means just to assert something without giving you any chance of considering alternatives. Many people, they are afraid of Bhagavad Gita because they claim it is a dogma book. This is a dirty word these days. People don't even know what the word really means, but they just, anytime they hear scripture, they immediately fire back, oh, it's just dogma. What they mean is that you're just giving me somebody's opinion which has become official truth. I'm not interested in any dogma. I'm not interested in any religious official teaching. I want experience. I don't want to hear institutionalized gospel. So, I've had many people tell me that Bhagavad Gita is high on the list of the world's dogma books because it's authoritative and people don't want that. They want that spiritual thinking is wide open and whatever you think, then that is spiritual. And certainly that is not what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Now, how can you consider that Krishna is being just narrow-minded, if you want to think that, when the Lord goes over so many alternatives in Bhagavad Gita? He explains Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga. He explains Ashtanga Yoga. Now he's talking about the different ways you can leave this world, the different techniques for departing so that you take another birth or you don't. So Bhagavad Gita is actually covering everything very quickly. Srimad Bhagavatam takes all the themes of Bhagavad Gita and expands upon them. But even in this one book, Bhagavad Gita, everything is covered. So Krishna is touching on the technology of leaving the body. Now this doesn't seem like it ought to be a very popular subject matter. Techniques for leaving your body. People want to learn techniques for how to enjoy the body. And they are very grateful to you if you can explain to them techniques for prolonging their existence in this body. But Bhagavad Gita faces the reality squarely that you cannot stay in this body, therefore you must consider where you're going next. That is intelligence. Just like if you're renting an apartment and you know you can't stay, you'll be considering where I'm going to move to next. You don't want to be homeless. You want to know where my next residence is going to be. So why can't you do that with your human life? Why can't you make a plan? What will my next residence be? But what is stopping us from doing that? Our senses are very strong, and they're demanding of us. Just take care of us. Just surrender to us, the senses. That's all. When we think about it, it is insane. I surrender to my mind and senses, and then what do I have? I get some fleeting experiences that they feel like they're actually not here at all. I get some kind of mental enjoyment. And then meanwhile, my body is breaking down. Time is taking everything away. So this is the craziness of material life. On the one hand, I'm feeling these urges. Get into the senses. Get into the mind. On the other hand, time is taking away your very mind and senses. Just like that disease, Alzheimer's disease, that's what it's called? Yes, Alzheimer's disease. You can't even remember who your dearly beloved is. Just like former President Reagan. He now cannot remember that he was president of the most powerful country in the world. He cannot remember. This is how cruel Maya is. One moment, you're on top of the world, president of the USA. A few years later, you have Alzheimer's disease. You can't remember you were president. People who have this disease, they can't even remember their beloved wife or husband. You've probably heard examples of that. They are in, the old man or woman is home with the spouse, and all of a sudden he or she forgets who the spouse is. Like, what is this stranger doing here? Who are you? I'm going to call the police. Get out of my house. What are you, the old wife? Sometimes even they're sleeping at night, and the man wakes up. What are you doing here? Who are you, you strange woman? I'm calling the police. This is how cruel Maya is. This is the Maya that we want to surrender to. This is the Maya that we want to embrace. And our head is full of these dreams that it's going to work out. Right, Emily? It's all going to work out somehow, right? You got all these things going against you. Time. It's taking everything away. Even your mental sanity is being deteriorated by time. Still, you think it'll all work out. And when we ask someone, please explain how it's going to work out, what do they say? How would you explain how it's all going to work out? How? Huh? What does he say? On its own. So you're trusting in the universe that automatically things will be all right. Many people feel like that today. Just have faith in the universe. The universe knows what you need. This is madness. What is going on when you say the universe? You're talking about creation, maintenance, and annihilation. There must be annihilation. I was just hearing Prabhupada say today in a lecture, cosmic annihilation has to be there because people get so out of hand that the best thing that can happen to them is they're annihilated. That's why Krishna has a cosmic annihilation. They just, they're so far off the mark that there has to be an annihilation just to clear the stage. So, these things are going on. Time is breaking us down. We're being frustrated, yet our heads are still full of dreams. It's amazing, isn't it? When you analyze those dreams, you have faith in your mind and senses. Well, I'm young. I'm strong. It's going to be all right. I've got time. I mean, my body, it needs to do things. My body needs to feel things. My body needs to be with other bodies. I'm just too young to become a saint. I'm too young to become pure. There's a lot of things I have to do first. I want to experience the world. But what does it mean to experience the world? It means basically you turn yourself into a refuse dump, a garbage dump. Be open to everything. People are very admiring of persons who are open to everything. Oh, you've been here, you've been there, you did this, you did that. Wow. And then you present yourself as, well, I'm open to anything. Krishna, skiing, Buddhism, Thisism, baseball, whatever. I'm just open to it all. That means you become like a garbage dump. Just whatever Kali Yuga throws at me, I'm just open to it all. No sense of discrimination. This is what happens when you surrender to the senses. No ability to discriminate. In spite of all these tragedies, we still think, oh, it'll be all right somehow or other. We refuse to see ourselves in the condition that will happen at any moment. Old age. No one likes to think of themselves as old. We like to think of ourselves as having a young body. Maya is so ridiculous. You know, when you're 13, 14, or 15 years old, if someone told you, you look like you're 21, you would feel very complimented. Oh, I want to be older. Because you're thinking, if I was older, instead of 13 or 14, if I was 21, I would be more independent. So you like it when people say, you look older. Then, when you're in your 30s, if someone says, you look younger, you feel complimented. Oh, yes, because you want to be younger. So this is the craziness. You're never satisfied what you are. Just like Sora's wife. I said to Sora, is this your wife or your daughter? Oh, she was very happy. Oh, oh, thank you, Maharaj. Thank you. Because I was implying that, she looked very young. So, this is, very young. This is good. So when you're young, you want to be old. And when you're old, you want to be young. This is what's going on. Can't we see through this craziness? And for all these illusions, do they come free? No, you have to work very hard. But we don't mind that. Right? You find someone who's going to employ you. You become like a little dog searching for a master. You go before a potential employer and you wag your tail. Just see how I can move my tail. Will you please give me some job? And you're willing to hand over the majority of your life. You have to work at least 8 hours a day. You're there at work more than you are with your family at home. But you're willing to do all that just to feel that you're on top of the world or you have a bit of control. The perfection used to be that if you could get a job, a lifelong job, how glorious that is. If you could work in the same company, the same factory, the same business for 40 years. Oh, that's wonderful. How secure. And certainly you'll get a pension when you retire. Of course, this dream has been shattered as most people work two or three, four places during their lifetime because the job situation is not so secure. So why do we have this desire to hand ourselves over in this kind of slavery to our senses? It's insanity. Yet we want to. We want to give ourselves to the material energy. Please take me. Please let me join the material energy. Let me absorb myself in the material energy. I'll take whatever you give. You tell Maya, I'll take whatever you give me. Just let me join you. Just let me enter into the process of material life. I don't mind whatever you throw my way. I'll take it all as the universe helping me. So with this kind of madness, we waste our human form of life. It is a great tragedy. And our attitude is we take it so calmly. Perhaps you heard about the Swiss Air plane that crashed off Nova Scotia, killing everybody on board. So they just uncovered the flight recorder, and they could understand that up until 9 minutes before the plane crashed, everyone thought things were okay. The pilot and the crew, they were in the front of the plane, and they had their oxygen masks on, and there was smoke in the cabin where the pilots were. But they weren't panicking. They had brought out their checklist, which had written on it all the possible reasons why there could be smoke in the cabin. So they were just going down the checklist. Could it be this? Could it be that? You know, they were confident. No worries. You know, they had it all under control. And they even told the flight attendants that we're just going to turn off all the lights, just to turn off the electrical system. So, but don't let that stop you, because the people were having dinner. So they told the flight crew that you just clear the dishes with flashlights, but there's no need to worry. Everything is all right. That was 9 minutes before the plane crashed. Even though there's smoke in the pilot's cabin, they knew. We have our checklist. It's all under control. 9 minutes later, the plane hits the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean with such an impact that when the divers went down to check for any kind of remains, they just found everything was blown to bits. So this is how we live our life. I've got my checklist. I'm not worried. The doctors are there. The government is there. My family, whatever remnants of it are together. My family is there. I know me, and so I'm here. So my checklist is protecting me. Everything will be all right. Never mind. Just like the pilots who told the flight crew, just go on clearing the dishes. Use flashlights. It'll be all right. No one was panicking at that point. So this is how we live our life. We're not concerned with how to pass from this world. No, we're concerned how to enjoy this world. It's a fever that's burning in us. And it consumes our ability to concentrate. So, into this kind of madness, Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita. So we hear, according to Vedic opinion, there are two ways of passing from this world. Now, what is this Vedic opinion? Is it possible to date when the Vedas were recorded? You'll have a hard time doing that because Vedic knowledge actually is knowledge transmitted through sound. Someone speaks it and someone hears it. So even if you can figure out the date when the Vedic literatures were written down, which no one has done yet, still you cannot figure out when Vedic knowledge originated. Now, when you go to school, either in high school or at the university, they will teach you that writing is a symptom of civilization, that perhaps 4,000, 6,000 years ago, whatever, human beings developed from having primitive agricultural communities to having the beginnings of cities, and that's when writing happened. Human beings advanced to the point where they could write. The Sumerians, the Egyptians with their hieroglyphics. This was the great burst of human advancement. Now, what is the Vedic version? The Vedic version is that a civilization that has to write things down has declined. Just the opposite. Civilizations that have to write means the brain power has been reduced. So therefore, the Vedic literature was written down because Vyasadeva could foresee in the future the brain power of human beings would be very small. Whereas previously, everyone could remember just by hearing once. They could remember the Vedas. So when you hear that writing is a symptom of it, of human civilization, you should chuckle. Because from the Vedic point of view, writing means decline, the age of Kali. Now people cannot understand how it is that human memory could have been so sharp that people could have remembered all these things without writing them down. Yet, even today, Indologists, they agree that, for example, the Rig Veda has been handed down for thousands of years with almost not even minute, the smallest change, just by sound transmission. They'll say at least the Rig Veda was done like that. As far as Bhagavad Gita, which is part of the Mahabharata, and the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a Purana, they say, oh, these are recent creations. What is the verdict of the Shastra? In Chaitanya Bhagavat, Lord Chaitanya explains that Srimad Bhagavatam is an eternal body of knowledge that appears and disappears from time to time. So how can you date the Vedic literature? You cannot date Krishna, therefore you cannot date the Vedic knowledge. Better to say Vedic knowledge even more than Vedic literature. Because it's true, at some point the Vedic knowledge was written down. But that doesn't mean the Vedic knowledge began at that point. So just like you cannot date Krishna, you cannot date the Vedic wisdom. Therefore, in Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, Veda Narayana Sakshat. The Vedas are directly the breathing of Lord Narayan. And just like the breathing of Narayan is eternal, similarly, the Vedas are eternal. So all this information in Bhagavad Gita is giving us a very quick overview of the different possibilities. Everyone likes to hear that. What are the possibilities open to me? So Krishna is giving you a quick synopsis of the possibilities. You can leave your body at this time. You can leave your body at that time. Then he's giving the message to the devotees, because Bhagavad Gita is actually meant for the bhaktas, the devotees. Naite stri partha janan yogi muhyati kashtana. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu yoga yukto bhavarjuna. Although the devotees know these two paths, O Arjuna, they are never bewildered. Therefore, be always fixed in devotion. Purport. Krishna is here advising Arjuna that he should not be disturbed by the different paths the soul can take when leaving the material world. A devotee of the Supreme Lord should not worry whether he will depart by arrangement or by accident. The devotee should be firmly established in Krishna consciousness and chant Hare Krishna. He should know that concern over either of these two paths is troublesome. The best way to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness is to be always dovetailed in his service, and this will make one's path to the spiritual kingdom safe, certain, and direct. The word yoga yukta is especially significant in this verse. One who is firm in yoga is constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness in all his activities. Sri Rupa Goswami advises, anasaktasya visayan yataham upayandita. One should be unattached to material affairs and do everything in Krishna consciousness. By this system, which is called yukta vairagya, one attains perfection. Therefore, the devotee is not disturbed by these descriptions because he knows that his passage to the supreme abode is guaranteed by devotional service. So if I say to you, you're going to die in 1 year. 1 year from now, you'll die. I give you your medical prescription. I'm sorry to say, your body will be finished in 1 year. What will you do? What would you do? What would you do, Emily, if you heard that in 1 year, that's it, no more skiing, What would you do? Probably read. What would you read? Yeah, you read those books. Anything else? Just read? Mend broken relationships and do what kind of service? In other words, you would seek out the association of devotees. Yes? What would you do? If you read the previous verses, it would tell you it's referring to the time when the sun is in the north or when the sun is in the south. So, still, if you're going to die in 1 year, what would you do? Yes. Very good. Anyone else? We have any guests here? No guests? Falcon, you have any guests here? Finish the task? Like, finish building your business in 1 year? finish his business, finish some... Is that what you would do, Emily? Whatever goal you have set, you finish it fast. So, any other guests here, Father? Where? The young lady in the back with the girl. So you have 1 year to live. What would you do? Yeah. What is that? Okay. Now, that's what you would do if you know you had 1 year to live. And suppose there was a doctor who said, I probably can do something about your situation if you follow my instructions. There's a good chance you can get a complete remission. You'll get a complete reversal in your decline. What would you do? If the doctor told you that. Still, you would follow the doctor's instructions. Yes. All right. Now, we don't know that we have 1 year left. We don't even know we have 1 week or 1 day. But we don't take that seriously, right? How many of you are sure you have 1 year left? And here in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is being the doctor. He's giving you instructions how you won't have to subject yourself to repeated birth and death. But who wants to take it seriously? So this is our problem. When we read about Prichit Maharaj in the Bhagavatam, cursed to die in 7 days, we feel sorry for him. But Srila Prabhupada always pointed out, you don't even know that you have 7 days. He knew he had 7 days before he was dying. You don't know you have 7 minutes. Yet the head is full of plans. This is madness. This is craziness. So Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is giving you reality lessons. This body has to go. Now what are you going to do? What is your destination? You want to mend the relationships. Huh? But what about the relationships in your previous life? Are you going to mend those? So why you just focus on relationships in this life? What about the, you know, previous lives? What about when you were a fish, the relationship with the other fish in the ocean? Why don't you try to mend those? Because you don't remember, right? So you think, I'll feel good if I can just mend the relationships that I can remember. And as soon as you're dead, whatever welfare work you've tried to do to mend relationships and get people to live together, it all, even before you die, it all collapses anyway. Yet we want to feel like we accomplished something. The example Prabhupada always gave, the man is dying. He tells his family, okay, I am passing on. Please take care of the wife. Take care of the children. I am going. But where is he going? He doesn't know. But yet he said, please take care of the wife. Take care of the children. What about him? He doesn't know where he's going. He said, I'm passing on. Where are you going? He doesn't know. So it is this kind of ignorance that Bhagavad Gita is seeking to eradicate. And Krishna is speaking for our benefit, precise knowledge. Now, Bhagavad Gita is part of the Mahabharata, which is originally meant for the non-philosophers. Yet, in this stage of Kali Yuga, the greatest university professors cannot understand Bhagavad Gita. And actually, it's meant for the non-philosophers. This is how the intelligence of humanity has shrunk. That which is meant for the non-philosophers, even the greatest professors today can't understand. But we are getting this chance. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschid mam veti tatpata. Out of thousands amongst persons, only few are striving for perfection. And of those few who are striving, fewer still have achieved perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, fewer still, only one knows me in truth, Krishna says. So if that's the case, that Krishna consciousness is beyond even Brahman realization, knowledge of the all-pervading effulgence of the Lord, if Krishna consciousness is beyond all that, and it's such a rare person who knows Krishna, what are we doing here? The answer is Lord Chaitanya. Krishna comes as his own devotee, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to teach us what it's like to render devotional service and to freely distribute love of God. We are busy loving this, loving that, and if we say, learn about love of Krishna, we have some doubts. I don't know if this is for me or not. But if we say, we'll teach you how to love the material world, then you become very enlivened. Yes, I want to love the body. I want to love money. I want to love temporary relationships. We say, love Krishna? I don't know. This is our position. Any questions? What to do about such a situation? Everyone knows what it's like to prepare for a test. But the real examination is the time of death. Where will we go next? You know about the near-death experiences. Everyone knows about that, right? People who are clinically dead, they're giving no readings on the medical instruments that there's any life in the body. Yet, these people, they can describe from a scene up above the operating table everything that's going on. Even though they're not medical experts, after they come back, they can tell you exactly what the doctors were doing, the surgeons were doing, even though they don't know anything about medical science, so it wasn't possible for them to have any kind of knowledge any other way of the situation, but they can describe it. They say, we're above the body, we're seeing people, the medical staff crowded around the body trying to revive it. Sometimes they describe floating outside the hospital room, and they can see things that you cannot see ordinarily. They could, one lady described a tennis shoe on the window ledge of the hospital building. There's no way you could see that from the ground. There's no way you could see it from inside the hospital room. So the one nurse, you know, she went through the trouble to search for this tennis shoe that was supposedly on the ledge. And indeed, she found it. And it was clear that there's no way anybody could have seen that tennis shoe other than by floating outside. So these things are documented. So people are thinking, yes, these near-death experiences show us that there's some kind of eternal part of us. And because many near-death experiences aren't hellish, people are thinking, we're all just going to be happy after death. They say things like, death is spiritual for everybody. But we should point out, there is a great difference between a near-death experience and a real death. Just like there is a huge difference between a near collision on the highway and a real collision. Many of you have had near collisions on the highway. Just missed being in a crash. So, you know, there's a difference between that and the real crash. Similarly, there is a big difference between near-death experience and real death. Krishna is telling you about the real death experiences in Bhagavad Gita. And what happens? You'll go here, you'll go there. It depends on many factors. But if you're my devotee, you don't worry about that. You just become absorbed in devotion. Any questions? So you should think how to invest the time of my life. What to do with it? What is the best thing I can do for myself and others? The senses and the mind are always trying to get us to be selfish. Just think about us. Each sense is demanding you. Just think about me. That's why Prahlad Maharaj says the senses are like having senses. It's like a man with five wives. Does anyone here have that experience? Each wife is pulling. Come to my room. Come to my room. So each sense is pulling on us. Satisfy me, satisfy me. With such uncontrolled senses, you can't focus on what the real mission in life is. That is why we consider a society that is dedicated to economic development to be demoniac. Because people become so absorbed in this economic fever, they cannot think about the goal of life. This is the great tragedy. You can look around and see. People have, they don't have the ability to think clearly what I am, what my goal will be, what I'll be like 30 years from now. They can't do it. This is a great tragedy. It's not nothing to take lightly. Yeah, well, anyway. Let's get on with life. Let's get on with it. Let's be practical. We have many responsibilities. We have many duties. No! The intelligent person stops right there and thinks, why should I go even one step further? I have no knowledge of what I'll become. I have no knowledge of where I came from. I don't know who I am. Let me stop right here and make a solution to this ignorance. That is the hero. That is the heroine. It is these kind of persons who take Krishna consciousness seriously. But those who cannot develop any kind of resistance, to the current, the powerful current of sense gratification. They're just washed away by sensuality, economic development, mindlessness. But the hero, the heroine, becomes Krishna conscious. What is the point in me doing anything when it's all temporary and I'm ignorant? Let me get knowledge. Let me learn how to conquer repeated birth and death. For such persons, Krishna consciousness comes very easy. So that is the purpose of our establishment here, to train persons how not to get another body. The most valuable education. Can anyone think of something better to do? Any suggestions? What do you think, Emily? You can think of something better to do? Our guest here who says everyone will try to complete their task. Can you think of anything better to do than what Krishna is giving as the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita? No, but for most people, they should think, I don't want another body. The advanced level is, I don't care whether I take birth or not, I want love of Krishna. But first things first. First we should go to high school, then we go to university. First we should think, I don't want another birth. Then as we progress in Krishna consciousness, we realize, bhakti is so powerful, it doesn't matter whether I take birth or not. I just want to be absorbed in Krishna. So are you ready for the high school or the college? But you must find out. That is the point. You must know. And what is your duty? You must be...